And now, to conclude this CBC Wednesday night, designed in tribute to summer, we move east to Halifax for 30 minutes to present an extraordinary edition of Trans-Canada Matinee. This five times weekly feature of the Trans-Canada Network is generally heard, as the title would suggest, in the afternoon. However, it is hoped that on this occasion, the audience will be increased by presenting it at this more convenient time. The program, compared by Marvin Mellowbell, will feature this evening a talk on bird life in northern Canada by the distinguished ornithologist and world traveler, Dr. A.J. Nest. Summers I Have Known with James Bannerman. Timely Tips for Summer Meals with Mary Wollstonecraft. And What I Learned from the Utes, a talk on the Indians of the American Northwest by Dan Potter, along with several other items of general interest at this season. The entire production is under the direction of Rawhide, whose nature no amount of music for the time doth change. Immediately following station identification, CBC Wednesday night will continue from Halifax. This is the Trans-Canada Network of the CBC.
Thank you, J. Frank Willis, and good evening, Canada. This is Marvin Mellowbell with a special edition of Trans-Canada Matinee. Today, June 22nd, is the first day of summer, and, well, all of us here on Matinee were pretty excited about the whole darn thing. Because, well, when you look at it, actually, June 22nd is more than just the first day of summer. It's, well, it's also the day after the last day of spring, isn't it? So, we hope you'll all enjoy what we have in store for you on this special summer edition of Trans-Canada Matinee. And, by the way, as a special bit of devilment, we've asked all our speakers to come to the studios dressed in tennis shorts and old running shoes. And we'd like to thank the CBC Board of Governors, the Privy Council, and the Canadian League of Decency for allowing us this infringement of CBC regulations. This crazy little touch of lighthearted summer nonsense on this one particular occasion. Now, let's see what's on tap on today's matinee. Well, first it's birds, always a pleasant and familiar ingredient of our Canadian summer. And to tell us something of the different types of birds we can expect to see on our holidays this summer, here is Dr. A.J. Nest of the Canadian Institute of Ornithology. I hope, Dr. Nest, you're comfortable in your tennis shorts and old sneakers.
Oh, you Trans-Canada Matinee people, you're just funsters, madcaps, and out-and-out hellions.
Yes.
Well, sir, I aim to start off this little talk by putting my cards on the table. As us ornithologists say, I'm going to give it to you straight from the craw. I've seen me a heap of living, I've seen me a heap of places, and I've done me a mess of living. And that's a messy sentence. But I've picked up one bit of philosophy what's seen me through good times and bad. She's my golden rule, and I'm passing her on to you. You treat birds good, and they'll treat you good. And I'd like to tell you, we can learn a lot from birds on how to live proper. You've never heard of a bird being up for murder in this country, have you? You can look in all our jails, and you won't find no birds. Yes, sir, birds are clean livers. I've lived with birds most of my born days. I've yet to hear one swear, see one smoke, lose his temper. I'd like to see the day when our Canadian birds take their rightful seats in the House of Commons. I personally know a big, fat, good-natured Canada goose sitting on four eggs this very minute up on Baffin Island. Make the best prime minister this country ever had. I'd like to see the day...
Excuse me, Dr. Nest, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think what we had in mind from you was more the physical aspect of birds, their description, habits, and so on. Could you try it along those lines, please?
Well, when you're on your holidays this summer, keep your eyes peeled for plovers. The plover, she's a fair to middling-sized bird, long legs for wading, characterized by two kneecaps in each leg for crouching. Now, you take your average bird, just one kneecap, leg only bends so far. The plover can get twice as much crouch, legs fold up like a camp chair, two kneecaps. Got a plover at home, caught him, tamed him, call him Elwood Plover. Most amazing little critter you ever saw. Dead ringer for Elwood Plover, except for the two kneecaps. Look, so much like this here Elwood Plover, I called in Jack Arthur, Canada's Mr. Show Business, makes his nest in Toronto. Jack, he looked at the little critter, couldn't get over the resemblance. Said the bird was a natural for vaudeville or TV. But said if he wanted to make the C&E grandstand show this summer, he'd have to learn to talk like Elwood Glover, as well as look at him. They look like him. They're right fussy on the C&E show. Well, sir, I worked on that bird for weeks, but the stubborn little critter just wouldn't talk like Elwood Glover. Of course, I could have split the little critter's tongue. That would have did the trick. But I don't know. I don't like treating birds that way. However, me and Jack Arthur put our heads together, and we think we got the answer. Jack's given me till mid-August to get a hold of Elwood Glover, split his tongue, and learn him to talk like the bird. If I can do it, Jack's putting the pair of them on to headline the C&E Grandstand Show come fall. Well, there's lots of birds I could tell you about. There's the cowbird. He spends his summer on the back of a cow. When the cow finishes eating, the cowbird sits in the cow's mouth, picks the cow's teeth clean. I know this is CBC Wednesday night, but I got to tell you all I know about birds. Then you got the cowbird bird. He sits in the cowbird's mouth, picks the cowbird's teeth clean, and goes on and so on. Well, then let's see, you got the cuckoo. He's a lazy critter. Goes around making his nest and other birds' eggs without busting the shell. Then, of course, can't forget our old canter goose. Now, you might say this big fella, canter goose, he's sort of the national bird of Canada. And doesn't he know it? That critter won't make his nest out of nothing but John Fisher's old clothes. And it's too bad, because a lot of these big Canada geese, come nesting time, they get left with the short end of the stick, because there just ain't that many old clothes of John Fisher kicking around. You see, you take your average female Canada goose, it takes one pair of John Fisher's old trousers to bed her down good for the laying-in period when she's getting fixed to whelp. Now, if she can't get hold of some old clothing of John Fisher's, she just won't lay. She'll hold onto them eggs by sheer willpower. Upshot of the whole thing is Canada goose population dying off. National birds getting scarce as bones in a banana. All the bird lovers in Canada been after John Fisher to toss away at least one suit a week. Been after him 5 years, but he still just toss them off the rate of one suit a year. Yeah, don't you talk to me about John Fisher and all that sop on our duties as Canadians. John Fisher's killing off Canada goose.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Dr. Nest. Dr. A.J. Nest holds a chair at Cornell University in Guano and is considered the leading authority in North America on the mating habits of the snowy-crested blimp. Now, a familiar and welcome visitor to our matinee, poetess, suffragette, and home economist, Miss Mary Wollstonecraft, with some timely tips on summer meal planning. Mary?
Hello, ladies. Well, I'm just going to give you a very, very brief talk on summer meal planning. I'm calling it a summary. Summary. E-R-Y and A-R-Y. My, aren't we off to a clever start? You know, ladies, there's a very old English folk song that goes something like this. Summer is a-comin' in, and Laura sings cuckoo. And I imagine you ladies won't get much of a chance to enjoy summer a-comin' in as long as the biggest cuckoo of them all, your husband, is singing Laura for his meals. Couldn't resist that play on words. If he was out doing a little work in the garden, you wouldn't mind cooking for the slob. But really, the way they lie around, ladies, you know, letting the grass grow wild, the weeds get out of hand, and then they've got the nerve to expect you to feed them. You know, ladies, something's got to be done about men.
Miss Wollstonecraft, we haven't too much time. I wonder if you could perhaps leave the organizing for some other day and perhaps say a little about summer meal planning.
Well, I can see freedom of speech is just a hollow laugh on this program. However, this summer, ladies, especially if you have guests dropping into the home, why not plan some meals? Meals lend so much to summertime, and a good idea this summer is to build your meals around ice cubes. They're so easy to prepare, and they're so good for you. For breakfast, you might like to try glacial cap porridge. Now, this is simply ordinary porridge, but with a shimmering, refreshing ice cube sitting on the top where the brown sugar would normally be. This, of course, can be followed by bacon glacé. These are just ordinary strips of bacon wrapped around ice cubes and impaled with a toothpick. This is a pure delight for folks who like their food crunchy. Now, if I know old Fat Face, no matter how hot the weather is, he's going to insist on a hot meal in the evening, just to build up his strength, you know, for household chores such as lifting his knife and fork, turning the pages of his newspaper, adjusting the TV set.
Miss Wollstonecraft, please.
Well, if he insists on a hot meal, ladies, here at least is a refreshing way to prepare it. Into a frosted beer glass, Mind you, I'm sorry I had to use that. I imagine a sherbet glass would do. I forgot this is CBC Wednesday night. We're just pretty free and easy on Trans-Canada Matinee, usually in the afternoons, but I'll take that back for this special edition. Into a frosted sherbet glass, place half a cup of crushed ice. Next, in go the hot potatoes, meat, and vegetables, all cut up fine and frothed up with an egg beater. And then top it all off with a garnish of ice cube. And, of course, don't forget the lemon slice on the rim. Now, if you find an ordinary drinking straw won't do the trick, cut up the garden hose into 1 foot lengths for each member of the family. After all, it's better than having it lie around rotting in the garden all summer just because Flab's too lazy to get out due to the manual work. Let me tell you, ladies, if I had my way...
Oh, thank you, Miss Wollstonecraft. Thank you for those timely tips on women's rights. Making your summer meals more attractive. Now, continuing with this special summer edition of Trans-Canada Matinee, A Summer I Remember. Reminiscences by three new Canadians of summer in their native England. At our microphone are Sir Cyril Hotspur of Devon, England, George Goomer of Somerset, and Mr. Alfie Dykes of London. Gentlemen?
Well, actually, I feel more qualified to discourse on the beauty of summer in France. You see, in the summer, I usually go to Cannes. Lovely beach, you know.
Us go there, too, but us don't spend all summer. Ours don't have beach.
Sir Cyril, you must have seen some lovely English gardens in summer. Could you tell us about them?
Oh, yes, quite definitely. My own estate in Devon, you know, is a picture in summertime. Laburnum trees, oak and yew, primroses, cowslips, and the wisteria. No matter where we lived in England, my wife, you know, always had wisteria. Oh, now, just how it is, Governor, my wife's the same way. Can't look at a blooming mouse without screaming her head off, going up the ruddy walls. Nasty business, wisteria.
I imagine, Sir Cyril, an English estate would require a lot of time and care.
Oh, no, not actually, you know. English shrubs and flowers, they look after themselves, muddle through somehow. Lot of guts, you know. Of course, getting back to my wife's wisteria, had to use the spade a lot there. Plenty of water and manure. Blimey, Governor, that's a corking good idea. I've just been giving my wife one across the mouth at the back of me hand. Wait till she tries that wisteria with me again. She'll get the spade all right, and the manure and the water all at once. Oh, blimey, that's a corking good idea, that is, Governor. How much do you let her have, about a pitchfork full? I don't think we're talking about the same things, sir.
What would you say, Sir Cyril, would you say that English gardens in summer are they much different from Canadian gardens?
Oh, yes, quite. You see, the big thing over there is tradition, you know. The trees, for example, more proud and regal, stood for centuries, brought over by William the Conqueror, you know. I had on my estate in Devon the very stone from which King Arthur drew forth the sword Excalibur. It stood for centuries, you know, washed by English rain, blown upon by English winds, and still it stands. Tradition, you know.
I'll second that, Governor. You can't beat England for old things. What's lasted and lasted. Now, you take Alfie's Rock.
Alfie's Rock?
Hey, it's a big rock on the beach of Blackpool, sir. Now, our family sort of adopted that rock. That rock was there when my grandfather was a boy. He fell on it one day. Me old grandfather, old Alfie, did. He split his head open. Blood all over the rock. That's 95 years ago. And to this day, that rock's still sitting on the beach of Blackpool. Washed by English rain, blowed on by English winds, but the blood's still laying all over it. Old Alfie's rock. That's tradition, eh, Governor?
I suppose so, yes, quite.
Be it all right if I ask question?
Why, yes, Mr. Goomer, I'm sorry. We haven't heard much from you during this little chat.
I've been thinking what him said over there.
You mean Sir Cyril?
Aye. Where did him say him spent summer?
Why, on the beach at Cannes.
In Somerset, us only had flowers around ours. How much be it costing to have beach put in?
I think we'll move from summer gardens now, thank you, gentlemen, to one of the gayest ingredients of summer, and that is summer camps. Now, on this special summer edition of Matinee, A talk on camping and wood lore from one of the foremost authorities in this field, old Dan Potter. Dan Potter has lived for most of his life with the Indians of the Western United States, and he calls his talk, What I Learned from the Utes. Now, as far as we on Matinee can gather, the Utes, like the Cree and the Blackfoot, were once a flourishing nation, but now live in scattered camps in the northwestern United States. What I Learned from the Utes, with old Dan Potter. Sir?
Yes, sir, boy, I've learned a lot from Utes. Every summer I take a bunch of Utes up to me camp in Algonquin Park, see, and I learn them wood lore, you know, and I'd like to tell you, if everybody took more interest in our Utes, there wouldn't be none of the tier of juvenile delinquency there.
Excuse me, sir, aren't you talking about Indians?
No, it's talking about Utes, young Canadian Utes, what's going to be the men and women of tomorrow. Like I say, there, I got this here camp up in northern Ontario there, Algonquin Park. As for Utes, what, it's got problems, you know. Little city kids there, what don't get on good with their family. Got a lot of lip and a lot of sass there. They come up for a summer at old Dan Potter's camp there. You see, delinquent youth is me specialty there. They come up there to begin the summer. They're crazy mixed up kids there, all kinds of emotional problems. And old Dan sends them back in the fall with a complete psychological grease job done on them. Yeah, psychologically speaking, them kids get their oil changed, their valves ground. They go back to their families there, serene, all adjusted there. Mind you, I ain't saying they ain't got problems still. They got to figure out things like how to chew their food with 5 or 6 teeth missing, how to handle a knife and fork with both arms in a sling. They got problems, all right, but they're different ones, you see?
Just what are these Utes, these young people, just what are these young people, Mr. Potter, taught at your camp?
Well, when they arrive at me camp there the first week, they're full of sass, see? They give me a lot of lip there. Like I say, I just got them fresh from the home there, and they're all mixed up. So right away, I put them on moccasin making. You see, in moccasin making, you got to chew the leather, soften it up. She's an old Indian trick what I picked up there. And I just found that a kid with his mouth full of leather is a quiet kid. As soon as he gets one deer hide all softened up, I ram another one right in his mouth. And of course, for the best part of June, that camp, it's one of the quietest places in Canada. You hear a pin drop there. Of course, we never get no moccasins made, but... they get an awful lot of chewing done in the month of June. By the end of June, we got a pile of soggy hides there, about 20 feet high there. Then I sort of get lonely for the sound of a human voice again, so I take them off chewing. Believe me, there's no sass and lip left in them kids, boy. Their lips gone right down to a nubbin from all that chewing. And then at the end of September, I learn them canoe handling there.
Well, what about the months of July and August? I believe you forgot those, too.
Well, they got to make the canoe before they can handle it, you know.
Well, does it take 2 months to make a canoe?
Well, I make them chew all the birch bark, you know. Believe me, I still ain't taking no chances with that there sass and lip there. you show me a kid with his mouth full of birch bark, and I'll show you a good kid. Well, by September, they got the canoe all built and ready for their first lesson in amphibious canoeing there.
Amphibious canoeing? Just what do you mean by that term, sir?
Well, amphibious canoeing there, you know... Instead of lifting your canoe in the water and putting it out and portaging on your back for maybe 5 miles, taking your canoe off your back, putting it in the water, all that stuff, that's crazy, see? I just do this here amphibious canoe. Now, I get the canoe laying on the land, and I get the young kid, you see? And he walks up to the canoe and smiles at me. I cuff him a couple of times. I don't like him smiling, you know, because that's just a prelude to sass when he starts smiling. I give him 2 or 3 across the mouth, and I say, get in the canoe. Then, grabbing the gunwales with both hands... He pulls the canoe on like a pair of shorts with his feet sticking out the bottom there, see? He can then walk around. He can portage for miles. When he wants to use the canoe in the water, just walks right in. None of this messing around, this old gray owl stuff. That ain't for me, boy. He don't need no paddles, you see, because like I say, the kid's got his feet sticking through the bottom, and he just sits there and does a flutter kick with his feet under the water. Or he should see the visitors up at the camp. We have 2 days for visiting there. I get the kids into shape, take the cast off their legs, things like that. Get the bandages off. We let the parents come up, you see, just for 2 days. And when they come up there, they can't figure it out. These kids just sitting in a canoe with their hands in their lap, looking straight ahead, and the canoe is going like crazy because their feet's under the water.
But with a child's legs, I mean, hanging in the cold water for, say several hours, wouldn't they swell up and make it difficult to remove the canoe?
Oh, yeah, sure, them legs swell up, 4 or 5 times normal size there. Them kids walking around, I think they had elephantiasis there, but... We never take the canoe off. We don't worry about the legs swelling up because the canoe never comes off there. First day that kid steps in his canoe, he's got it on for the rest of camp. comes to dining hall with it on, goes to bed with it on. Matter of fact, I send them home with the canoe still on them. You know, some camps, they send the kids home with little cheap things like pennants and little prizes. All the kids at my camp can take the canoe home with them. Mainly because I can't get the thing off. In summer, I figure that's the old man's job. I say to myself, let the old man chop it off, and the kid gets home there, see? Oh, let me tell you, the old CNR hates to see me bringing all them kids down to station there. Last day of camp, they get big, long scowls on their faces, see? Because we can only get 10 on a train, you know. These kids in their canoes there, only 10 to a train. But the main thing, and I want to leave you with this thought, the main thing when them kids go home, these well-adjusted kids there, when they finally get away, when they take their reluctant farewell from old Dan Potter, these well-adjusted kids there.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Thank you very much for this talk. And now, our last contributor to this special edition of Matinee, we take a backward glance at one of the nostalgic memories of summer, childhood games. James Bannerman finds it's not too difficult to look back on one's boyhood and to recall the many hours of pleasure spent under a Canadian summer sun. Mr. Bannerman?
I often wonder how many of the fine old games I enjoyed as a boy are played by children nowadays. Games such as Run, Sheep, Run, Tap the Icebox, Duck on the Rock, and, of course, Kick the Can.
Us never did that to ours in Somerset.
Somebody get him out of the studio, please. Certainly, one of the loveliest of all childhood games, and I think my favorite, was Run, Sheep, Run. Now, any number of boys could play this game, and it required very little equipment. Just an old truck with high sides, capable of holding 40 or 50 sheep, which we always managed to be able to pick up somewhere in the country. The point of the game was to single out some bad-tempered old lady in the neighborhood whom we didn't like and who didn't like us. This, I might add, was the easiest part of the game. Next, we waited until the opportune moment came, usually when she was entertaining friends at high tea or playing hostess to her bridge club. Then we would back the truck up to the front door and ring the bell. As soon as the door was opened, we'd all yell, "Run, sheep, run!" And away they'd go, 40 or 50 sheep, right into the house. I've never laughed as much since, except, of course, when I'm doing the introduction sometimes to CBC Wednesday night. One, two, three, red light was another game I used to enjoy as a boy growing up in Toronto, although I'm afraid I can't tell you too much about it on Trans-Canada Matinee. However, I must mention that best known of all childhood games, skipping. I notice nowadays the children use ropes for this pastime. But in our version of the game, we always found a forged note from our father seemed to cut much more ice with the principal than a silly old rope. Well, time is running out, but I must mention one last game. I used to love this game because of the pretty song which went with it. Here we go gathering nuts in May, nuts in May, nuts in May. As a matter of fact, that's exactly when we played this game, early in the morning, when no one was around. I can still see us, a dozen or more young boys, walking up to somebody's parked car, singing like veritable cherubs, "Here we go gathering nuts in May." And when we got to the car, that's precisely what we did. We stripped off every nut and bolt in sight, and then we all hid and waited for the owner to get in and start the car. Of course, the same thing always happened when the poor fellow stepped on the accelerator. And to this day, I've never forgotten the sight of those four wheels shooting out from under the chassis, roaring off down the street as the owner dropped with a loud crash in a pile of rubble on the road. Yes, all that is only a memory now. We made our own fun in those days. It was simple and it cost nothing, but by Jove, I still think I was better off than some of these modern kids who would rather be out running over my lawn, climbing my trees, and in general, making darn nuisances of themselves. Good evening.
James Bannerman is heard regularly in the CBC Wednesday night series, and he also appears on the program Now I ask you. Among his many accomplishments, he was for several years a boy. Now that seems to conclude our performance of Special Salute to Summer on Trans-Canada Matinee.
Just a second here and don't conclude nothing. I'd got shortchanged there. You gave them other contributors there more time than you gave me. That there Mary Wollstonecraft there, she's had more time, and it's here James Bannerman, and I was accusing you of favoritism.
Please, this is highly irregular and most embarrassing. We did not intentionally give anybody more time than anybody else. Now, if there's anything you'd like to say, you may say it.
Okay. I want to say that one of the best places to take your kids in the summertime there, it's down to the Maritimes there, to Citadel Hill.
I thought your camp was in northern Ontario.
No, it's got camps all over the place there. Wherever there's youths, that's where I got me camp. I figured there's delinquent kids all over Canada there, and we can salvage them kids, so I like to set up camps down in the Maritimes too, you see. Now, this here Citadel Hill...
This is perhaps getting away from the subject of summer camps.
This here Citadel Hill, I think everybody should know about it. It's a beautiful place to take kids. Now, Citadel Hill, I won't go into the history of it.
Thank you very much.
Suffice to say, it was built by the by French ants for the British there. But this Citadel Hill, towering in Halifax and overlooking the city, is an ideal place to take a mixed-up kid. Like I say, I get these kids there from their families. They sass them and they lip them. Their families let them get away with murder, you see. One of my favorite places when I ain't got them making canoes in Algonquin Park, I take them down a Citadel Hill there, and I put the kid on the ground. This is called therapy, physical therapy there. I sit him on the ground, and then I take the 2 feet, and I stuff them in the kid's mouth.
How does this help the child? I don't quite follow it.
Well, the main thing we're worried about, you see, in our business is sass and lip. Like I say, there's the 3 things. If a kid's chewing deer hides, if a kid's chewing birch bark, if a kid's got his feet in his mouth, you don't get no sass from him. Don't ask me why. It just seems to work out that way. But then that ain't all. If a kid's really mixed up there, we just take him up to Citadel Hill. We sit him down, put his feet in his mouth, and we give him a shove down Citadel Hill there, see? And he goes down that there hill, head over heels. The hill's quite a height there, and he'll travel maybe 1/2 mile down into the heart of Halifax, right down the business section there. And when that kid gets up, he's a better boy and a better Canadian. And he's ready then to take his rightful place in this glorious country of ours there. And I'd like to say that once again, them youths, what I look after, should more people should pay more attention to the youths of this country, because the youths, it's going to be the men and women of tomorrow. And now, I'd like to turn it over to me old friend. He was one of me boys years ago when I rolled down Citadel Hill, and he's never got over it neither. Old Rawhide.
Well, I'd just like to come in here, and there's not much voice left over after you guys get through with it. I'm the last one to come in and use it. But I'd like to say thank you to the CBC for allowing us to come in here this evening and present our special salute to Summer on Trans-Canada Matinee. You're sure some of you others wouldn't like to contribute anything more?
Well, if that raucous chap is going to have his additional say, I don't see any reason why I shouldn't say one more thing about meal planning. Now, ladies, this is something I didn't have time to tell you before, but in the summertime, I don't know whether it's the smell of things growing or the feel of our hands in the rich earth, but I get feeling, so primitive. And I think that we could carry this wonderful feeling of primitivity or primitiveness into our meal planning. Now, earlier in the program, Dr. Nest gave us an interesting talk on birds, and that gave me a wonderful idea. Instead of sitting around morosely eating our meal in the same old drab fashion around the dining room table, you heard what he told us, Dr. Nest, about that clever little cowbird, was it? Yes, cowbird, sitting on the cow's back, picking the cow's teeth. I got a vivid mental picture of that, and immediately I thought we could all adopt that in our summer meal planning. So, ladies, instead of sitting around some Sunday this summer eating our food off the tables, let's give in to that primitive feeling, take the whole family out to the country, find a cow in the field, and all of us can have such fun sitting on the cow's back and enjoying our meal. Sitting on the cow's back, I don't mean, of course, that we're going to go into the cow's mouth, but at least let's all pretend that we're little cowbirds and eat our food on the cow's back. I think that's all I'd like to add, except that, ladies, don't let the men get away with a thing, will you? Good evening.
That then concludes the special salute to Summer on Trans-Canada Matinee. The entire program was conceived, produced, directed, and whatever else the CBC does to programs by Marvin Mellobell. This is the CBC.